Case number 07-1362, St. John's United Church of Christ et al., petitioners versus Federal Aviation Administration et al. Mr. Karaganis for the petitioners, Ms. Thurston for the respondent, Ms. Solomon for the intervener.
Hello again.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Judge Griffith.
May it please the Court, my name is Joseph Karaganis. I'm here on behalf of both the religious as well as the secular community petitioners. This morning I'd like to make the following points. One, it's clear that they're standing both for the RFRA claim and the passenger facility charge statutory claim. Obviously, the earlier Bensonville 1 case established the standing with regard to the PFC claim. There is no state action issue here, and I'm going to suggest because...
I'm sorry. The PFC simply in terms of...
The Bensonville 1 case, the 2004 Bensonville case, established that those who use the airport and paid PFC charges have standing to challenge the issuance of a PFC authorization. In our affidavit submitted in support of our standing, we established that both the secular as well as the religious petitioners do pay PFC charges and do have standing.
The other Bensonville case really cast doubt on the RFRA standing.
On the RFRA standard, I'm about to get to that.
Okay.
The second Bensonville case, what we refer to as Bensonville 2, raised the RFRA standard. And I'm going to suggest, Your Honor, and I have been confused about Bensonville 2 ever since it came down, but I'm going to suggest a reason for a rational determination of it. And I'm going to suggest that it is not a state action issue. It is a standing issue that needs to be resolved. We think that the Denver communication case, as well as the cases cited by Judge Griffith in his dissent in Bensonville 2, suggests that the real question when there's a federal actor responding to a federal mandate, that it isn't a state action issue, it is a question of whether there is a causation or traceability issue with respect to the federal actor. As a standing issue, and the RFRA statute specifically says that Article 3 standing requirements shall apply to RFRA actions. As the standing issue goes, what we're really saying here is that where there is direct federal funding of a project that is known to cause an injury that is protected by federal law, there is standing. That would be true whether it was an environmental case.
Direct federal action is approving a charge by a state actor.
Well, it is approving, Judge. It is a federal action right now under federal law. The award or authorization of a PFC is a federal act which requires the federal government to invoke, among others, environmental protections. And
so,
we don't
so is approval of an airport layout plan. I was in the dissent on that.
But Judge, this is no longer a question of allowing Chicago to do something that where there's no compulsion or encouragement. Here, what the federal government is doing is providing, call it $600 million, call it $1 billion, call it $2 billion, huge amounts of money for a runway which will destroy the cemetery.
Sorry, you keep saying providing, but you don't mean providing.
Authorized.
Authorizing the applicant to
charge
other people.
Right. And as it stands under federal law, the authorization by the FAA requires the FAA to protect the environment. And we're suggesting that Congress intended no lesser level of protection for religious rights than it did for environmental rights. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act is not a second-class statute. It's entitled to at least the same equivalent protection as is the environmental law. So our religious rights, we believe, If the FAA is providing authorization of funds that requires the FAA to protect the environment, then it's certainly required to protect the religious rights of people who are injured by that activity, which is going to be funded. And the funding here...
Let's talk about whether they're going to be injured a bit. Given how far along the O'Hare project is, even if you were to prevail on your argument about the authorization of the PFC that would fund the runway extension, it's going to happen anyway.
Judge,
they're almost
with
there.
All due respect, the representation made in the briefs, all they have done with respect to the runway that is supposed to go through St. Johannes Cemetery is move dirt. There's been not an ounce of concrete poured. So if this court were to decide...
But it's an integral part of an overall plan, which is way down the road.
Judge, it's...
They're going to get the money from somewhere else if they don't get
Judge,
it from PFCs.
Again, they don't even have the money to go forward with the next level of design. What we're saying here is, again, and as this court well knows, we've been trying to get this issue to this court through several proceedings. The only runways that are under construction or have been for which concrete is poured is one on the far north and one an extension to the north of the cemetery. The runway location where the cemetery would be, there's been no concrete poured, and should the court remand this PFC authorization, one, in a PFC proceeding, the FAA would have to consider RFRA considerations, and the FAA might, had they followed RFRA, come up with a different conclusion, which if they did, and here again is part of our standing issue, the City of Chicago, when the FAA did make a RFRA decision with regard to the other religious cemetery, Chicago followed the FAA directive. That was even in a permissive situation. So there's no reason to believe that if FAA followed this proceeding and redid the RFRA analysis.
A long time ago, wasn't that? You're talking about the Rest Haven Cemetery?
I'm sorry, the Rest Haven Cemetery, yes, Your Honor.
A long time ago. There's a lot of water under the bridge since then.
Well, it's not for lack of trying for us getting to the court, Your Honor. Last time we were here.
But under Utah versus Evans, you have to show us that there's a significant likelihood that you would prevail.
Well, Judge, I can say
that's hard to imagine given
I can say this.
Given how far along the project is and how much money is involved
here. The project is less than 20% underway. The rest of the project, which is known as Phase 2, doesn't even have engineering funds yet, and the City of Chicago doesn't have the engineering funds. They're going to be applying for more federal money for the engineering funds. Wait. One of the options that could be pursued, for example, is among the alternatives, instead of destroying the cemetery, there's another runway to the south, which could be utilized as an additional runway now, and they could do the RFRA analysis. So the fact is that the schedule that was set forth before this court previously has not been followed by the City of Chicago. The City of Chicago has been substantially delayed in what it's proposing to do.
Why isn't the brief treatment in the second Bensonville decision on the LOI with respect to standing, why isn't that fatally against you here?
Well, again, the LOI decision...
It turns on the prospect of Chicago digging up the money elsewhere.
And, Judge, what we've said, and we put affidavits in to that effect, is that there's no other place for the City of Chicago to get other funds elsewhere. The City of Chicago is on public record saying they're not going to go to the bond market. They're not going to put their taxpayer at risk. So there's PFC funds... There's airline GARB funds, and there's a possibility.
You can't imagine them ever changing that viewpoint, right?
I'm sorry?
You can't imagine them ever changing that position?
Well, Your Honor, if the City of Chicago, and again, this is true of every point of federal funding of a destructive, of a project that's destructive of federal values. In each of those cases, the actor, be it a local actor, can say, well, we're going to forego the federal funds. Or if you rule against us, we're going to go get our money elsewhere. And that's certainly their prerogative.
I mean, I understand that argument, but why is this essentially a binding decision that binds this panel? That is to say, all the arguments you're making are equally applicable, I think, to the LOI aspect of Bensonville.
Your Honor, as to the LOI aspect,
if
I might point out, the LOI aspect was a jurisdictional decision at the time, and a jurisdictional decision is not res judicata, but second...
No, that's not true. There's actually a famous embank on that subject in this circuit.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, the one was it wasn't a final order, so we couldn't challenge the LOI, and that is an alternative ground. That's what the court said. There was no final order. as an alternative ground, they said, oh, by the way, the city of Chicago says it can get, it's only 10% of the project or 12% of the project. We're talking about 50% of the project here. We're talking about a very substantial amount of money. And if this is the ruling of the court that simply says when a private actor is deprived of federal funds, he can defeat it on a standing basis by simply saying, well, we're going to get the money elsewhere, then every environmental case that involves federal funding is going to go out for lack of standing because every actor can say, I'll get the money elsewhere. And then, as this court pointed out, it goes, gets the money elsewhere, and then comes back in for reimbursement after
let
the environmental.
Let me ask you a practical question about that. Chicago points to the possibility, forsworn by the politicians, but still the possibility of going into the bond market. Now, what income would it use to repay those bonds?
It would use being FAA a Chicago,
well.
And I would help pay for them, Your Honor.
Excuse me.
I would help pay for them as a Chicago real estate holder by real estate taxes. That's how Chicago, when it does bond, and that's one of the reasons why it's
exclusively real estate.
Yes.
In any way, draw upon the passengers, well, and the airlines.
No, because the airlines have a veto power over that, Your Honor. Now, the city of Chicago says, well, wait a minute, we can start bonding out 15-20 years from now after the airport rights. The airline rights are gone, but under those circumstances where they could charge the airlines under a new lease in 2020, 2030 would have the ability to say yay or nay on that. But there's
well, they have the ability to negotiate.
I'm sorry?
They have the ability to negotiate.
They have the ability to negotiate, Your Honor, and they are now 3 years into negotiations with the airlines where the airlines have said no more money for phase one. So we think that there's a substantial potential for relief here. We know that when the FAA has been directed protection of a religious cemetery, namely Rest Haven, that Chicago followed the FAA directive. We believe that that's an appropriate time. The other thing, Judge, turning quickly to the PFC statute. The PFC statute has certain record requirements. One of the things that's completely missing in the record here is any record evidence to support the fact that adequate justification, which is determined to be whether or not there's a proportionality between the benefits and the costs of the project. And they use the Phase 1 airfield project for each of their determinations.
Right. Okay. On that, if I understand it correctly, it's this chart that you've created. It's at page 373 of your addendum, right? The city's benefit-cost ratios.
Yes.
That's central to your claim.
Well, it's not. What's central about it, Judge, is that the PFCs do not require a formal requirement that benefits exceed the cost. It's
right.
A proportionality.
But the basic thesis that you derive from this chart is when we move from phase one master plan to total master plan, suddenly that increment, if we treat that increment as a relevant bite, has a staggeringly negative benefit-cost ratio, right?
A disproportionate ratio, yes, sir.
Now, the first question that comes to mind is, what are the benefits considered there? Now, this is, I believe, on other material that you cite, this is only delay reduction and also something that seems closely related, improved efficiency of traffic flows.
No, the benefits selected there are so-called consumer surplus benefits primarily, Judge. And the consumer surplus
consumer
benefits.
Consumer surplus comes from reduced delay.
No, reduced fares.
No, consumer, it says reduced delay.
Well, Judge, it's a combination.
And I'm just looking at the material you've cited.
The reduced delays allegedly result in a reduction in fares, and that the airlines will be forced to give a reduction in fares. And the counterpoint to that by the economists who have written the books on this say consumer surplus has to be counterbalanced.
I don't think that none of the briefs really make serious arguments as to the exact computation of benefits. But it does seem clear from, there's a page you cite in support of this table, F18, which is 6763 of the Joint Appendix, that it is a very selective segment of the benefits that are involved in this calculation. Is that right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I do not understand what you mean by a selective set. What page are we referring to?
We start with the table at page 373.
373.
Okay? And that says at the bottom, sources, the PFC application at page F18 and the city's supplemental benefit cost analysis at page 85. Now, we turn to F18, and it talks about benefits quantified in BCA.
Right.
And there's another column, which is much longer and fuller, benefits not quantified in BCA. That goes on and on and on and
yes.
on. The ones quantified are delay reduction and this improved efficiency of traffic flow, right?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not following your question. I do apologize.
I tried to figure out how this table that you invoke, which it is, am I not correct in saying it's the centerpiece of your argument?
No, it is one of the points. There's an independent point, Your Honor, that there's no basis for these benefits at all. But with these benefits,
I didn't see that well significantly argued. It seemed to me that
You're referring to the table on page add 373.
Exactly. And then it cites its sources.
Yes.
So I wanted to see what its sources were. And F18 seems to make clear that it's an important subset of benefits that are quantified, but a very selective portion of plausible benefits.
Oh, Judge, we believe these are the total benefits claimed by the City of Chicago.
Well, then what about the other column, benefits not quantified in BCA?
I'm sorry, I'm not finding that column, Judge.
Are you on F18, which is at J6763?
No, I'm on P373.
Yeah, but I'm going to the sources of it, trying to figure out, how your claim originates. Okay?
Judge, if I may, I don't have the F18 with me.
Well, take my copy. That's 6763.
Oh, Judge, the column you're referring to is benefits not quantified in BCA. There's no numerical quantification of those benefit claims.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
So that the benefits that are quantified are exclusively in a narrow set of benefits.
They're the ones
narrow but important.
They're the ones that can be quantified, just like religious benefits.
Well, I'm not sure that the others can't be quantified, but these are the ones that the city chose to bother to quantify, okay?
Yes.
So in the first place, we start out when we look at this table, knowing that a whole set of benefits that would be completely relevant are off the table, right?
They're not in the record. If they were relevant, Your Honor, and could be claimed.
No, that's not necessarily true at all. I mean, the standard for the FAA by its own regulations is a rather loose one, right?
No, Judge,
and so it would be perfectly natural to say, well, these sort of hardcore benefits, which have been quantified, take us up to a certain level, and then there are a lot of other benefits that...
Judge, there's a detailed manual by the FAA as to what benefits can be quantified and what can't be. It's a cost-benefit guidance manual.
Okay, but there's nothing about the provision on the reasonable relationship between benefits and costs that limits it to the quantified benefits.
There is nothing
correct?
In this record which says that there are unquantified benefits which satisfy the proportionality standard.
Well, they aren't quantified. So,
no, but there's no not even a reference to it, Judge.
Well, they're listed and they're fairly obvious benefits. Let me go on to the next point. That is, you're essentially comparing the benefits from. Let's take the one which appears to represent the most complete set, Phase 1 master plan, with total master plan. And look, the benefits have only gone up by a tiny bit, while the costs are much, much bigger, you say. Right?
If I may, Judge.
What I want to know is why is the move, why should we be concerned about the increment? I mean, your expert says, but of major interest is the fact the incremental benefit is only $200 million, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Why does that incremental benefit concern us at all?
Well, for two reasons, Judge. One, there's a requirement that the benefits be in proportion to the cost.
These particular benefits, the benefit that increment?
Take it at either level. The benefits.
No, I just want to take
those.
The big number you have on your side is the move from phase one master plan to total master plan.
Right.
And what I want to know is why we should have any interest in that increment.
Well, Judge, if the reason for, among other things, destruction of the cemetery or any of the other adverse values which aren't in the balance of costs and benefits, the adverse environmental values, is predicated on the economic utility and economic value of this project. If the destruction that is going to be caused by the remainder of the project...
You're not hearing me. Your whole assault on the logic of the benefit-cost analysis turns on how the move from one row to the next row has a staggering negative benefit cost outcome.
Only
right?
As to the 207
million. But what I don't understand is why that's of any interest to us.
If I may, Judge.
Because as I understand it, we're in phase one airfield
the
project.
Incremental analysis does not apply to the $1.012 billion. That's only for phase one master plan versus phase one airfield. It has nothing to do with an incremental analysis.
You have put your case on this particular increment.
Yes, for the 200.
But you haven't explained anywhere that I can see precisely what is in that increment or why it should concern us in this case.
Judge, it is explained in both the FAA brief and our brief as to what facilities are in phase two beyond the phase one airfield. It is explained as to what those facilities are.
Okay, and how do they bear on our problem here?
Well, it bears on the problem, number one, Judge, that the land, and there's an issue of fact here, but that the land for which they're seeking the $270 million reimbursement under the FAA regulations is for the ultimate development. And the question is are the benefits of the ultimate development proportional to the cost of the ultimate development?
It's the table you point to shows that the aggregate benefits exceed the aggregate costs, right? This is looking at the total thing.
Two points, Judge. One, the $270 million is the only place the $270 million is the only one where the incremental analysis applies. But first, the total benefits of the total OMP or total master plan have no foundation basis in the record. There's only one page in the record that covers that. Our economists have said there's no basis for it. You have no record basis for saying that the benefits of the total master plan are proportional to the costs of the total master plan. You don't even have in this record the total costs of the total master plan. So that's point one. Then if you take an incremental analysis in addition to that, that's when we get into the incremental discussion. But what we're saying, first of all, is this court does not have a record as to the cost of the total master plan before it. So one cannot at this point say what the cost of the total. That cost that you have in front of you is a cost from 2004, not 2008. And one of the questions is...
Then if I'm hearing you correctly, this table is really of no consequence at all. So I wasted my time following the lead that you gave as to why we should look at this terrible negative benefit-cost ratio.
Why go forward with a project that has incremental benefits of $200 million and an incremental cost of $3.5 billion? That's the question.
No, you... You're talking about an increment that appears not to be relevant to us.
Well, Judge, I can't. We believe it's relevant. If the court sees otherwise, the court sees otherwise. I'm sorry for taking the time.
Well, maybe the government will enlighten us, and then we can come back.
If I may get a minute or two for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Alice Thurston for the FAA, and I'll be splitting time 10 and 5 with Ms. Bennis-Solomon for the City of Chicago. I think the overarching point to be taken here is that there are four discrete projects before the Court in the federal agency's decision, and not the overarching projects that are attacked by petitioners here. This is important both for the RFRA argument and for the specific questions under 49 U.S.C. 40117. With respect to the RFRA argument, just speaking directly to standing, The only runway that can, in any conceivable way, be conceded to impact the religious petitioner's standing is runway 10 Center, which will pass over the site of the cemetery currently. The capital cost of 10 Center that the PFCs are going to pay for is 27% of that runway for a total of $346 million. The court has previously determined that the city of Chicago has the capacity to find alternate sources for $336 million. That was in the St. John's case. And the city of Chicago is committed to financing the relocation and of the cemetery with non-PFCs and non-grant money.
It sounds like a shell game, right? Let's say whenever any particular element of the plan is attacked, Chicago can always say, oh, well, that we'll pay for ourselves. Don't worry.
The petitioners have made that argument, Your Honor, in the past. The difference here, though, is that nothing is authorized by the PFC FAD, the federal agency decision, beyond the authorization to assess the money, because the prior decision in the ROD. Now
this is not the standing issue. This is the state action
issue. If I may bring it back to standing, okay. I will. The prior decision in the ROD contained all aspects of the project. The court was invited to review everything, including the financing aspect, because there was a financial feasibility study which laid out the expected amounts of AIP grants and the PFC grants and the fact that this funding was coming and was part of the FAA's project. So any authorization for relocating the cemetery has already been given, and the city of Chicago, irrespective of financing, irrespective of whether the PFCs were revoked, could already relocate the cemetery without either AIP grants or PFC funding. My point is that there's no...
You're saying without any money at all? Or what?
They have other sources of money, as the city found in the St. John's case. Not ones that the federal government has to approve. There's GARBs.
I understand that.
There are third-party financing.
It does seem to me, as a standing matter as opposed to the state action matter, it does seem to me that except in a case of a penniless and creditless actor, this makes it possible to essentially defeat any application of RFRA to federal funding.
Had the federal funding not been already considered in the ROD case as part of the financial feasibility underpinning the agency's decision there, there might be some question as to whether that was a separate issue here. But the court approved the FAA's authorization for the city of Chicago to undertake the actions on the ALP, including relocation of the cemetery and construction of 10C. The city has enough resources to do both without federal funding or PFC funding.
Let me see if I'm understanding. You're really saying that Bensonville 2 controls, because that is law of the case, and that itself assures adequate money for the cemetery relocation. Is that the argument?
No, the city has the adequate money irrespective of the FAA's funding of the runways that are not crossing the city of Chicago.
What's the source of that money? I mean, your GARBs opposing counsel said that the money doesn't exist, and in fact that the runway would not be built but for the PFC.
As the court found at 457 Fed 3rd at 70, legally nothing precludes the city from buying the property and asking for a federal reimbursement grant later. So one source could be, although the city has stated that it will not do this, the source could be that the federal government reimbursed it separately. Another source, which involves absolutely no federal approval, is general airline revenue bonds, which may be issued and may be paid for by the city of Chicago on its own initiative.
The question that we're supposed to ask on redressability is, if we were to side with the petitioners here, would it be substantially likely that the cemetery wouldn't be relocated?
No, I don't think so. I think the city has many choices as to how to allocate its resources. It has already, in fact, invested $100 million, contrary to petitioner's statement, on the runway. The city
is choices, but these are all painful choices, aren't they? I mean, most people find dipping into the pocket for $300 million or $100 million painful.
But the city's only asking for a third of the capital costs of the runway to begin with. It's got, obviously, planning, which has been reviewed in the course of the agency decision here and in the ROD for the other two-thirds of the runway. It's not as if the city isn't without resources in that respect. So given that the capital costs are only, and I don't mean to minimize millions by only, but they are $347 million, $10 million more than the court found was available from other sources and hence gave lack of standing in the LOI case, it is completely conceivable that the city can find other sources for financing this runway, and it is not predictable in any respect that the city would give up on this runway rather than some other aspect of the project if it had, in fact, some financial reason to do so. This is an important runway in the sense that it is the runway that is going to be built to accept extra large planes coming from Asia. So
could I confirm from you that what Mr. Karaganis said, and that is that these bonds which are spoken of are ones which would be paid out of ordinary Chicago tax revenue as opposed to anything focused on the airport?
I do not agree that that's the case, and I'm going to let Ms. Solomon speak to that more directly because she has more specific, but that surprised me when I heard that because I do not think that they're taxpayer bonds necessarily. And the court in the St. John's case said exactly the point we're making here, which is we're speculating as to what the city of Chicago would do if it were faced with some...
Well, although courts deny it, there's always speculation in these standing matters.
But there's what petitioners need to prove is that it's substantially probable that they would, in fact, not build this runway.
Could you... Let me just...
The incrementation?
Yes.
It is completely irrelevant, as you pointed out.
Let me step back. We have four things involved here, three runways, all of which have findings as to favorable benefit-cost ratios. And then we have acquisition of property. Now, the acquisition of property, if for some reason we looked at it separately from everything else, would obviously have huge costs and no benefits, because until you do something with the property, there's no benefit at all, right? So, I mean, it seemed to me that insofar as there's anything serious here, it's got to turn on the idea that somewhere in this record there is an indication that the use to which the property is put, the benefits from that use, are nowhere near as large as the costs of the property acquisition and additional costs incurred in improving the property once it's been acquired.
Well, let me...
I have to say that the record left me totally confused as to how anyone would go about doing that.
Let me first go to the statutory requirements, if I may take a few minutes to explain this. The only thing that needs to be justified is the four projects before the court and not something larger.
Right.
A benefit cost analysis, we know from case law and from the FAA guidance, is not a requirement for proving this up. And we have incorporated...
The reasonable relationship is.
Yes, and we've incorporated into the record the modeling that was done, the EIS, all of the planning that shows the need for these properties. Now, just to be practical about where these properties are, they lie off the end of the runways. And the runway has, if I'm a runway, the runway has a safety zone that expands outward from the end of the runway, so that which is supposed to be free of any conflicting use property. So the houses that are there have to be cleared for safety's sake. They're in the runway use zone. They are part and parcel of constructing a runway. You cannot operate a runway without clearing a house. They're also properties that are used for the relocation of the railroad, which has not occurred, contrary to petitioner's reply brief. It has not occurred yet because the railroad has moved to an interim location. This is a really complicated and big project. They had to move the railroad to an interim location, and it will be moved to a final location, which was previously approved in the ROD before the project is over. What you have is the all but six of the properties are used for the railroad location and for the runway safety area off of 10 Center. Six of them are off of runway 28L. But if you look at page 363 of petitioner's own addendum, you will see that property purchasing is, and all of the property purchasing, it's the second to last page of the addendum. I think I've got the page number right.
I'm sorry, what was the page number?
I believe it's 363. Let me just pick it up.
363.
Here it is. It shows the components of phase one.
What page are we at?
363.
Okay.
Oh, so excuse me, 636. I'm being dyslexic.
636?
637. This shows the phase one project elements.
Yes.
And you'll see that the land we're talking about is that pink land down in the corner, where there's an arrow pointing existing railroad to be relocated.
Yes.
The pink is the land acquisition. That's labeled up in the upper left-hand corner with arrows pointing down to the bottom.
Okay.
But all of the land acquisition is incorporated, as you see from the title of this exhibit that petitioners have included, as a phase one project element. And thus it is addressed in the BCA for the phase one project. It's not a question of having to prove the merits of the total OMP over and over again. This is.
And if we can just go back.
Excuse me.
It would be inconceivable to try to apply benefit cost analysis to the land acquisition as an independent increment because it has no function at all except as it contributes to the overall feasibility of, well, at least phase one. Is that correct?
Almost correct, if I may.
Okay.
The ultimate development of this land for its aeronautical purposes, which is the standard that is set forth in paragraph 4-19 of the relevant order, is to be in the runway safety area or to permit the railroad to be moved out of the runway safety area. Okay. So all of the analysis in this case, any individual component has to be assessed in its synergistic capacity with the other proponents. It's not a question of how many planes can land and take off on one way. It's how much that one runway can liberate other runways to also accept planes because of the ability to move from having a conflicting runway pattern to having freely operating, free-flowing runways that operate fully independently of each other. So the assessment is not just what you do with the individual location, it's how it's assessed.
Okay.
Am I?
I think so.
Okay. I have more in there's any, if there are any more questions on anything else, but thank you very much, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Let me turn right at the outset to this question of bonds. GARBs, General Aviation Revenue Bonds, General Airport Revenue Bonds, are a kind of financing that does not in any way depend on the credit of the City of Chicago itself. They are paid out of airport revenues. The City has stated and continues to adhere to its position. Taxpayer funds, property taxes, or any other source of taxpayer funds will not be used for OMP.
Now, the GARBs are limited by the agreements with the airlines.
The GARBs are limited by the agreement with the airlines for funding that will come out of airport revenues until 2018, which is the end of the use agreement. We have issued substantial amounts of GARBs payable after 2018 already, secured with no lease agreement. The 2005 bonds mature in 2035. There are millions and millions, hundreds of millions of bonds issued with maturity dates post-2018, and that's in the record.
So the contention is that the creditors have been willing to stake their money on the ability of Chicago to extract whatever is needed from the airlines in the period post-2018.
That is correct. On the ability of the airport, project.
Market, the bond market.
The bond market
dissipating. But of course, with credit markets in their current condition, I suppose one can question what that is.
Well, we have ratings that are part of the next PFC application, which has been, city has applied for PFCs for the phase two design, and there are more current bond ratings as a part of that application. It's not in the record, to be sure, but, you know, one of the problems with trying to imagine and adjust for current market conditions, of course, is simply to respond to the question. One has to go a bit outside the record, but it's all publicly available, publicly verifiable information. The important thing to remember about the GARBs is that, like PFCs, they're actually both paid by passengers. They're both paid by airlines in one form or another. PFCs are a more direct user fee imposed directly on passengers passing through the airport at the time and moment that they pass through, or at the time that it's collected.
The non-religious petitioner's standing is unshakable.
We don't disagree with that standing, Your Honor, but my point here is actually a little bit different. It is that there are, as the FAA has repeatedly determined, a multitude of sources, a variety of sources for funding this project. The FAA continues to find that the project is feasible. Interest rates have declined over what was predicted by the interest cost, $500 million. That's on Joint Appendix, page 6500, 6501. There are savings in the project, as well as whatever doomsday scenarios petitioners present. And that is why we do say and continue to insist, as Judge Griffith asked, about is it substantially likely to redress if the decision below is set aside. And it is not. One way or another, the project will and can be funded. It has been determined over and over to be financially feasible. If PFCs are not available, and again, as Ms. Thurston explains, we're only talking about $346 million in PFCs for the project costs of the one runway that the religious petitioners, and my standing remarks do concern only the RFRA claim, it's the only claim that they challenge. It's not a shell game, however. I do want to be clear about that. The RFRA issue was squarely joined and decided in the first case coming out of the ROD, in the ROD decision itself. That is not a procedural or a prudential ruling. It's not, they're not still trying to get to the merits. The merits of the RFRA claim have been decided. This court held in that decision, albeit by a 2-1.
We would reach that only if we rejected the FAA's standing.
That is correct. But my point, I was attempting to address your concern that if we keep moving money around, we can always say that there's no standing. My point is we're actually not continuing to just move money around in order to avoid a decision on the merits. The court must, of course, and will, of course, satisfy itself that it has jurisdiction over the religious petitioner's claim in this case. Because it's standing, it is jurisdictional, and the court will decide that. My attempt was to respond to your concern that when you cut up the project small enough, you can always say, an applicant for federal money could always say that particular piece is not redressable because that particular little bit of money can be replaced.
Go back to the GARBs. If they're funded out of something other than PFCs, it would be what?
It's airport revenue, Your Honor. The same way that
charges for landing slots or what? Or
It is charges for landing slots. It is leases, the stores, and the parking and the other facilities at the airport. It is some contribution by the airlines up to 2018 pursuant to the lease. After that, there is no reason to think the airlines are going to pack up and leave O'Hare. They will be there, and they will pay something for the privilege of being there. And the GARBs have been sold in the billions of dollars, including maturity dates after 2018. We ask the petition be dismissed. Thank you.
I take 2 minutes, Mr. Carrigan. 2 minutes, yeah.
If I may, Your Honor, and Judge Williams, you were shown two exhibits, which I think are illustrative and important for understanding here. One is Exhibit 3-8, which is on the back of the attached to the federal respondent's brief, and it shows the total master plan, and it shows all of the facilities involved. It's called Alternative C. It was rated at $14.29 billion in the EIS, is what the cost is.
Alternative C, yes.
Yes. Okay. That is the project for which land, because the FAA regulations say that if you're paying for land with PFCs, you have to show the ultimate development project. And when you do the proportionality of benefits test, you have to look at the benefits of the entire project as proportional to the cost of the entire project. You have one sheet in the record, one page, that purports to show the benefits and costs of the total project that is shown on that exhibit. One page and no backup. So that's the entire record.
Which page is that?
That's the last page of exhibit PFC 80, Your Honor, or LOI 80. It's the last document in the supplemental volume of the joint appendix. One page, and that's it for the entire record for that. The other exhibit, Your Honor, that I want to show you is Phase 1. And all of the determinations as a Phase 1, we've heard a lot of talk about individual runways being justified. All of the individual runway justifications are predicated on one document, and that document is the benefit cost analysis, which was the September 27, 2005 cost analysis, which was only on the Phase 1 project. It did not do benefit cost analysis for the individual runways. So the only record support you've got is that Phase 1 project, and when you turn to the benefits of the Phase 1 airfield, there is no...
I've looked at passages of the record. I can't give you the numbers now. I've looked at passages of the record that clearly make favorable findings as to the benefit and cost for specific runways.
Your Honor, the benefit cost numbers are for the Phase 1 airfield project. There is no evidence in the record.
They're runway by runway.
Not on benefits, Judge. Not on numerical benefits. If I may, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I can tell you that I've been through the record. The only benefits are for... The numeric benefits are for the Phase 1 airfield project. There is no data in the record to support the Phase 1 airfield project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted.